Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 107.
Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Ben, and mostly because we have seen a trailer for the 14th film of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, sir.
14. So that's right. Not even in 10 years. We're going to have 14 of these things. And boy, aren't you sick of this already?
Definitely not.
Yeah. Me neither. It's crazy. Yeah,
I saw this trailer and was like, damn it. I think maybe this is going to be the best one.
It's quite encouraging. Where we are, of course, talking about the Doctor Strange trailer directed by Scott Derrickson, I believe, who did Sinister and The Day the Earth Stood Still. Which is the remake, not the original.
I have not seen either of those movies, actually, but I have seen The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Yes, he did that. Is that good?
Yeah. It was good, actually. I mean, it was like, it was weird because it was a horror movie that was about, you know, it was a sort of religiously themed horror movie, and it actually took the religious part of it seriously and wasn't just like totally exploiting it, I think. So,
and it's a,
that's my only experience with it.
Is that like a courtroom drama, basically? Is there like a legal aspect to it?
There is a legal aspect to it, but it's mostly sort of taking on the idea of sort of whether, you know, whether the whole idea of Catholic exorcism should be taken seriously or not, and how people approach it. And I mean, it actually was, I remember watching it thinking, it's a movie that definitely, I think, is looking through sort of creepy, scary, horror-type material, but doing it in a very interesting and thoughtful way that can be perhaps even discussed outside of the movie theater, beyond just like, it's got more intention than just to scare people, I would say.
It's a Sidney Lumet exorcism movie, is what I'm getting from you.
Yeah, it was really weird when Vin Diesel shows up with a ball cap on. Yeah.
Find me possessed. So I haven't seen any of Scott Derrickson's movies. Honestly, Sinister is one that's definitely on my list. The Exorcism of Emily Rose is probably on my list now. I had heard that it's a lot better than you would think it was. The Day the Earth Stood Still, I've seen like bits and pieces of, and it looked not so great. And that's about the only thing that kind of gives me pause, since this is a big, effects movie. But then you see this trailer and you're like, oh, okay, this is not just, you know, the special effects look pretty good, but they also look incredibly original and wacky and imaginative. And that's, to me, that's almost more important than quality, you know, when it comes to special effects, is not necessarily that they're photoreal, but that they're being used in a interesting way. And that, I definitely think that from the looks of this trailer, Doctor Strange qualifies.
Yeah, I mean, I think what surprises me watching the trailer, because I was excited about the movie because I like this character and I think it was well cast and there was a lot that excited me, but, you know, I heard a lot of discussion about it going into it, and you know, a lot of the Marvel executives and Derrickson all sort of talking about, well, this is going to, you know, this is going to be a very important movie for us. You never know what means by that, but like, you know, we're getting into different, you know, different territory. We're opening up new things for Marvel with this movie. And, you know, when you see the trailer, all of a sudden I buy what they're saying and I understand, I think, what they were talking about on a couple of different levels. But, I mean, this definitely, I think it has some visuals in this trailer that kind of blow you away and, you know, makes me excited to see it in 3D. But on top of that, I think there's some sort of dialogue in this trailer that I wasn't, it suggests maybe some things that I wasn't expecting from this movie.
What do you mean?
Well, so, I mean, look, the one thing that they've kind of been speculating about and talking about with this movie is, you know, this is going to be so different. Like, this is going to take the entire Marvel franchise in a different direction. And I guess a lot of us sort of assumed they were talking about magic, right? That's what they were going to do with this. But they actually never even really talk about that in this trailer. What we do hear is Tilda Swinton bringing up the idea of what if this is just one of many realities? And that's a thing that, you know, I think we've talked about it a little bit before of, like, at a certain point, does the MCU become too much of a burden for all these filmmakers to write stories that have to incorporate all this other stuff? And one way they've gotten out of doing that in comic books, obviously, is by creating
multiverse,
you know, alternate realities, basically.
Right.
And that's not exactly what Doctor Strange does in the comics, but I think you could certainly, you know, without altering the character very much, you could make that what it's about. And I mean, maybe that's kind of where they're going with this. Maybe they're going to start to explore the idea of, like, hey, we can make movies that don't actually take place in, they're connected to all these other movies, but maybe it's a much more peripheral connection. And maybe we can make movies that, you know, kind of take place in their own world where we don't have to make everybody reference things that happened in all the other movies because they didn't happen here.
Right, yeah, kind of unbound by continuity, which has kind of been, you know, the major sticking point with Marvel up to this point, you know, is when you're so bound to continuity and stylistic continuity, your filmmakers can't exactly go make whatever movie they want. They have to stick to the rule book. And it's interesting because I've seen a lot of speculation that on the DC end of things that they were trying to figure out a way to kind of do something similar so that the TV universe can be, you know, somehow adjacent to the movie universe and introduce the multiverse aspect of it there. And honestly, the multiverse aspect is a DC thing. I mean, they the whole Crisis on Two Earths Flash story from the Silver Age is what kind of kicked that whole idea off, and then Marvel kind of has adapted parts of that idea to their comic continuity. But yeah, if that's the direction they're going, and I think you have a point because, I mean, Ant-Man, you know, dipped its toe in those waters when it introduced the microverse.
Definitely, yeah. We're getting super, super nerdy, by the way, right now. I'm realizing, the main thing about this, because maybe they don't even go that direction, maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but I do think as a movie studio, which Marvel is, I mean, they're a full-fledged studio churning out 3 or 4 movies a year now, you know, this would eventually become a problem that I think you'd need to solve, and this would, to me, this suggests they have perhaps found what could be a very elegant solution to that, which is we can connect the movies if we want to, but we can also make a movie that is not connected, and we can just have everyone assume, like, hey, it's connected, but in a very, very, very loose way. But, you know, if we want to make a movie one day that's got Gwen Stacy as Spider-Man, we can do that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's interesting because movie audiences, I think, can handle that now. I mean, I think that the biggest, probably for me, one of the biggest deals about J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movie was that, you know, was that they introduced the idea of a parallel universe and into a mainstream blockbuster movie and found a really, like you said, elegant way to keep the Roddenberry and the next generation continuity of Star Trek alive without sacrificing, you know, with still being able to re-explore the J.J. Abrams, Alex Kurtzman, Bob Orsi kind of side of things. And I think if Star Trek can do it, then surely Marvel can come up with a way to do it. But yeah, you're right. We are extrapolating an awful lot from a 2-minute teaser trailer that has very little dialogue in it.
It did, however, have Tilda Swinton punching the soul out of Benedict Cumberbatch's body.
Yeah, his,
that was awesome.
I mean, Yeah, that was whenever I knew something was about, like, something crazy was about to happen. But that cut is, like, so great, and the look on his face, and just the way they rendered that is really great. And from that moment on, it just goes bonkers. I do think we were in the Film Nerds thread earlier, and Craig brought up the Matrix Inception, the Matrixception kind of feeling of it.
Yeah.
All.
Sure.
I definitely see that. You know, it's Neo and Morpheus intercut with the scenes of the cities folding in on each other from Inception. And I do think, in general, the whole thing does have a Wally Feister, Christopher Nolan kind of shooting style to it, plus the globe-trotting nature of it all. So I definitely think that this is the most Nolan-inspired looking Marvel movie that I can tell from anything I've seen, and it doesn't have that sheen of a Captain America or Iron Man or Avengers movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it works really well for this character, though. I mean, I only very recently read some Doctor Strange, and I went back and read all the original stories, the old stuff. And, you know, it's even for its time, it was a story where I think the fun of it is how completely weird and, you know, it's got, like, weird to a disturbing degree, kind of. that's kind of what that is all about, that character. It's why it became kind of a cultural phenomenon in the 60s, is it's sort of all about somebody having their whole world ripped apart and their mind blown. And that really, basically, if you were to ask someone, what is the thing you think of today, where it's a great story about somebody having their entire perception of reality shattered, you know, The Matrix and Inception are two great examples of that.
Absolutely.
That idea. So, I mean, it's not surprising they would kind of, I think it would evoke those movies, both of those things. But again, this is a story that has been around a lot longer than The Matrix or Inception was. So, you know, I think it's possibly fair to say Christopher Nolan was influenced by Steve Ditko at some point in his life.
Absolutely.
And I also think the thing that surprised me, because, again, my only experience with this being comic books, when you read the comics, you know, the sort of weird visuals that you get, it's very vague, and it's sort of, you know, kind of surrealist art. And on a piece of paper, that looks very different than in a movie. And I really love what they've done with the sort of mirroring of images, and where everything's sort of like, I guess it's this idea of like kind of a mix of looking in two mirrors that are facing each other and kind of fractals on top of that. It's just a very interesting...
It's like a kaleidoscope kind of approach.
Yeah. It what now?
It's like a kaleidoscope approach.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Where you have different planes intersecting and reflecting one another. Yeah, it's great. And honestly, I haven't been like super psyched for this movie. I like the character. I think it's interesting, but I was like, well, you know, best case scenario, it's going to kind of be like Thor: The Dark World, where there's so much magic and fantasy stuff that it's basically just. It's just going to be Benedict Cumberbatch standing there and then a bunch of, like, CGI lasers and smoke and crap flying around him. I was like, that doesn't sound that interesting. But this trailer, again, maybe because it's not leaning so much on this is all magic, but rather that this is kind of a different reality and reality is actually warping, it doesn't feel like CGI noise. In fact, it feels quite differently. It all looks so, I don't know, it looks photoreal, but also looks interesting in such a new way that it's really exciting. And honestly, I also expected it to be camp, because if you think about all the, you know, all the characters that they've worked on so far, I feel like the two that have the most room for camp, if the filmmaker doesn't know exactly how to approach it, are Thor. And we kind of got that, and they found a pretty good balance of the camp there. And Doctor Strange, I think. You know, there's that, I think, 70s or 80s TV movie
right,
that a lot of people really like, and it's really kind of trippy and crazy looking, but it's also very campy. And that's kind of what I was expecting. But again, like this is the least campy looking Marvel movie I could imagine. And also, and it's true to the character, because when you read Doctor Strange, as crazy as everything he's going through is, it's not a super like fun and light book. You know, like you said, this is a guy whose world has been torn apart, who's lost his livelihood and never really had a great sense of purpose to begin with. And it looks like it plays it very straight. And I think that's another interesting thing, for Marvel to be doing here.
Yeah. We only get glimpses of the other characters too. I mean, we know in some cases who they are and who they're playing, but I'm very interested to see more. You know, I'm sure we're going to get a longer trailer at some point this summer, but I mean, this has given me a good taste of it. I think Tilda Swinton is, I love the casting choice as soon as I heard it, but I think she's a really cool, she has a very strange presence in this. Not exactly what I was expecting, and that's kind of what you get out of Tilda Swinton. She's going to do whatever the hell she feels like. But you get a little looks at Edgefor, who plays a very important character.
Yeah.
I won't spoil it if you're not familiar with the story, but he's a very important character. And then, yeah, like one shot of Rachel McAdams, who I guess looks like she's, a nurse or a doctor or something. And Marvel's been very careful not to say who that is, who her character is. So I'm kind of very curious about that. I know we didn't see either of them, but I know Michael Stuhlbarg and Mads Mikkelsen are both in this movie also. And those are two actors that I think it's almost like guaranteed they're gonna be interesting with what they do in this movie.
Exactly. Yeah. It's overall, I was really happy with it. Again, there's images in this trailer. I can't tell you what I'm even looking at. Sometimes that would be a bad thing, but I think in a teaser trailer like this, that's a really great thing, and it's a really gutsy move, you know? And then it's all capped off with that Eye of Agamotto kind of stairway shot at the end. That's so iconic and everything, but at the same time, I can't imagine what somebody who is totally unfamiliar with this character is getting from this trailer.
Right, yeah. It's just very, like, evocative imagery, and I think, again, I mean, Marvel can, I think, afford to do some of this stuff because they're like, listen, I think people trust our brand at this point. You know, like, we even made a movie called Ant-Man, and enough people saw it. So, like, we'll go, you know, let us show you something that shows you that this is going to be weird and it's going to be different from the rest of the stuff we've done. And, you know, let's see how it goes.
Real quick, what did you think of Benedict Cumberbatch's American accent?
Oh, yeah. I actually, for some reason, I guess I was expecting him to be British in this movie. And I was like,
yeah,
okay, let's do it. But no, they're like sticking with that he's like a New York surgeon. And I guess maybe an American accent helps because this character is supposed to be kind of an asshole before he becomes Doctor Strange.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think I was very surprised when I heard his voice, though. Yeah. I think it'll be cool because it will immediately separate it a little bit from the other stuff we've seen Benedict Cumberbatch do.
Yeah. And just his casting alone, I feel like that is going to bring so many people to this movie. And it's something I would have not, you know, thought about a year or two ago. But it does seem like Benedict Cumberbatch is now probably, except for that Marvel brand, the biggest reason that people are going to go see this movie. So it's kind of exciting to see him potentially, you know, let this be his step right into A-list kind of superstardom. So do you have a second to talk about the other Marvel news of the day?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so you talked about we talked about how this is kind of one of the more obscure characters and how Ant-Man and Doctor Strange are kind of gambles for Marvel. There's been big news in terms of not a gamble at all for Marvel, in that not only obviously we knew that there was going to be a Marvel/Sony Spider-Man reboot, and that Spider-Man would be showing up in some other Marvel movies before that movie comes out. But today they announced the title of the new Spider-Man movie starring Tom Hollander of Rev and Pirates of the Caribbean. The name of the new Spider-Man movie is going to be Spider-Man Homecoming. Now, you're pretty enthusiastic about this idea, and I'm a little bit more reserved. So let's say I'm an executive. Let's say I'm a Sony executive, and you're the Marvel guy trying to pitch me this title, and you have to convince me. So what is your pitch for this title without, you know, obviously you have no story, you know, you don't know what the story of the movie is. What's your pitch, Matt?
Well, look, there's a couple of things. And first off, his name is Tom Holland, not Hollander. Tom Hollander is a different person. But
he was great in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I just don't know how he's going to look in the suit. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Now, look, here's what I think. We don't know a whole lot about what they're going to do with this movie. We know Marissa Tomei plays Aunt May.
That old hag.
Yeah. But other than that, we don't know anything. We don't know what the story is going to be based on. The only other thing we know is they've said throughout that they want this to be a story where Peter Parker is a high school kid, where he's legitimately in high school and a kid, because that's so important to, I guess, the direction they want their character, their version of Spider-Man to go at first. And I get it. It sets him apart. You make him deal with the sort of, you know, uncertainty and change of teenage years. It's a good place to go with that character. And I don't think, honestly, I don't think it's been done all that well. I think that I really liked certain things about Raimi's Spider-Man movies and about Mark Webb's Spider-Man movies, but I never bought either of those guys as a person in high school. They were super, you know, they were actors. They were like cool people. They were living adult lives, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely Tobey Maguire as a high school student did not work. I think Garfield and Emma Stone, I think they totally pulled off the high school thing.
I don't
but
know.
I'm old,
I think
so
like,
I can't tell.
I think they were way too confident to be high school people. I've never bought them. I mean, I certainly can't buy him as a you know, a weird cast out nerd that doesn't fit in. I mean,
yeah,
he's the coolest possible version of Peter Parker, and he's chatting up Emma Stone.
I agree, but at the same time, like, nerds are different now. So I think that it was a, you know, nerds are cooler. And honestly, as a 32-year-old man, I'm terrified of high school students. So they are all cooler and more confident than me.
Yeah. I think they went younger with it on purpose, and I think they want it to be a high school story. And look, there is most definitely an aspect of this title that involves taking a little bit of a shot, maybe not a shot at Sony, because they're certainly like involved in this production, but it's Marvel sort of bragging a little bit of like, hey, we got our big dog back, you know, like we got this very important property back under our roof. But again, I think it works on the high school level too. If you have no idea about the business side of it, I think it works. Because it's evoking high school. And again, there's probably, I'm sure, even another level that it will work on story-wise that we don't really know yet. But, you know, I do, first of all, the most important thing I think is, I think it needs the extra, the post-colon subtitle. I think it needs it. I don't always love that, but we are now rebooting Spider-Man for the third time. And I think we need to do something to differentiate it title-wise and say, this is something different that we're doing. You know, it's a different approach. We are not just straight up giving you Tobey Maguire again, but resetting. This is a different thing. And, you know, we're going to make Spider-Man movies with these little subtitles. And, you know, they're going to have a different feel to it. Now, this is not Clark Kent. pretending to be Spider-Man, you know, which is essentially what the Tobey Maguire version became very quickly. I mean, this is going to be in high school, dealing with high school things, and being Spider-Man. And we have not really had, in the Marvel Universe yet, we have not had a true kid superhero. I mean, not a kid, but you know what I mean? Like, a person who is not an adult. And I think, to me, that's what this title evokes the most to me. And I'm very interested to see how it comes out. I'm interested to see the kind of tone of the trailer. But, you know, there has been a lot of really excellent writing involving Peter Parker being that age. And,
yeah.
I mean, and Miles Morales, too, which you could certainly see them draw from. But, like, Brian Michael Bendis, who they've used a lot of his writing in these movies recently. I mean, when you go back and read his version of Peter Parker in high school, it's great, and it feels legitimately like an angsty high school person, and you know, the sort of awkward romantic stuff that he goes through. It's really wonderful, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Spider-Man was one of my favorites as a kid, but I mostly, you know, I experienced Spider-Man through the comics of the early 90s when he was a working photographer / scientist married to a supermodel.
Right.
And then on the Fox TV show where he was like a 40-year-old looking college student. So I didn't really, and then, you know, every now and then I would like pick up like a classic Spider-Man comic book if Marvel released something, and I would read, you know, some of the old Ditko stuff and kind of, it always seemed kind of weird that he was this weird nerd guy in high school. And it wasn't until I read Ultimate Spider-Man in 2001 or so that I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this totally makes sense. And, yeah, I agree that Bendis run is one of the best iterations of Spider-Man ever. And I'd also say that the spectacular Spider-Man cartoon show from a few years ago that I think Greg Wiseman produced is Peter Parker in high school, and it's fantastic. It's just really good for kids and for any fan of Spider-Man. So
they put out another comic book right now, by the way, that is Peter Parker in high school. It's something obviously Marvel likes a lot. The comic is called Spidey, but it's like it's a story they keep going back to even when they want to bring him to a different direction. I just think it works really well for that character.
And I think Joe Quesada or one of the Marvel editors at some point in the last 10 or 15 years or something actually like made like a rule basically where Spider-Man has to be in high school. Of course, they didn't stick with that very long in the comics.
Right.
but yeah, I mean, for me, I totally buy that. But for me, it's just it's a readability thing for the title that kind of bugs me. It just doesn't really roll off my tongue. But also, I think it works on three levels. And I'll go down the line of the levels that it works on in order of what it makes me think of and what kind of like the biggest things that the title does. One, like you said, it's Marvel waving their finger in Sony's face saying, we got him back. Two.
But totally with their participation. They can't have been like, this can't be too much of a finger in the eye.
Well, Sony doesn't exactly have a lot of leverage in this deal, let's be honest.
Right.
And then two is Spider-Man's rebooting again. So he's kind of, you know, he's going back to his roots again.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, yes, he's in high school. And the third one will hopefully – the third one is fine, but hopefully there's a bigger story element than just he's in high school. And high school – when you're in high school, sometimes you say the word homecoming. Like – there just doesn't seem to be enough of a connection there. And I'm hoping, I'm not going to spoil which movie Spider-Man is going to be in, just because I like pretending like that's still a spoiler. But maybe something happens before this movie comes out where he's gone on kind of a journey outside of New York or outside of his comfort zone. And this movie is him kind of settling back into the high school grind. And that way it actually makes sense as a thing in, you know, in the greater Marvel continuity.
Well, so, yeah, it's important to remember, too, that we're going to be, unlike the other iterations of Spider-Man movies, we're going to be getting a Spider-Man movie where we're jumping into the middle of a story, and we don't have to sit through the origin again. This is essentially will work if you have already seen either Spider-Man or Amazing Spider-Man. You will sort of be able to walk into this movie and treat it almost like a little bit of a sequel, if that's your only experience, because he's already Spider-Man. We already know how he became that, and now we're just sort of seeing what setting he's in, what his sort of normal life is, what his, you know, the characters around him are like. And, you know, again, I think there's some degree to which a lot of us here, we're making a movie about teenagers in high school, and we cringe a little bit. But I can tell you this, these screenwriters are not totally, well, as far as I know, there's only one guy with a screenplay credit, and it's John Francis Daley. So he doesn't have the most impressive resume as a screenwriter. I will say, though, that he has worked on a show that I think got high school better than anything I've ever seen, and that's Freaks and Geeks. So I'm kind of just intrigued by letting that guy be the one to sort of take a crack at it. I mean, he has done a lot of screenwriting. It's nothing that I think anybody would sort of tear their hair out over yet. But yeah, I mean, I'm willing to still be, you know, to still believe, I guess, that this is not going to feel like we are desperately trying to reach the millennial audience. I think you can tell a great story about kids in high school.
That's not my concern. I think my concern is that the title says more about the studio than it does about the character. And it's
probably not a coincidence they released the title at the theater owners convention.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I've been wrong about titles before. Whenever they announced the title of The Dark Knight Rises, I thought, wow, that is the most boring name for a Batman movie ever. And sure enough, you watch that movie and the story is such that that's the only title that makes sense, and it perfectly works. So I believe that the filmmakers will sell me on it. But again, if it's just about him being in high school and it's not thematically tied into the movie otherwise, then why not? I mean, then it just doesn't work if you replace it with anything else from high school. If you call it Spider-Man First Period or Spider-Man Homeroom, you know, like none of those make any sense.
Right, yeah. It's just a high school word, yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
And also there's so many other great, I mean, look, if you called it Spidey, like you said in that, that'd be really clever and be really unique and a lot of fun. Or if you called it Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, or Web of Spider-Man, or even Spectacular Spider-Man. There's just so many great Spider-Man titles out there, and it seems like it's... Is there a graphic novel or an arc called Spider-Man Homecoming?
Not that I'm aware of, but I do think, again, the uniqueness of the structure of the title, I don't think... I think has to have been a part of this decision. I think not having an adjective before it, but having Spider-Man colon something sets it apart. It makes it so that people probably are less likely to go, which one is that? Which one was that again?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it makes it a little bit more recognizable immediately down the road.
Well, hopefully the next one will be Star Wars. Well, hopefully the next one will be Spider-Man The Clone Saga, because that's what everybody wants. And with Zac Efron as Uncle Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll go well.
So... I guess my last question is, do you think that there's going to be a moment in this Spider-Man movie where Peter Parker stumbles into biology class, like falls to his knees and looks up at the instructor and says, "Teach me"?
For Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.